And now to basketball, where the big news in the women's NCAA final is that UConn is out. The Huskies did make the final on the men's side, but there the big news is that Butler is back for the second year in a row. All along, the men's basketball tournament featured a carnival of pratfalls as one Goliath after another fell. The women seemed on course for a more predictable finish until long-suffering also-rans rose up. With all these surprises and upset, what did we learn about the men's and women's basketball divisions this year? Our phone number, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Joining us now from the site of this year's Men's Final Four in Houston is NPR sports correspondent Mike Pesca. And Mike, always nice to have you with us.
Ah, good to be here.
And let's start with the men's bracket. It's hard to imagine anybody would have picked Butler and the University of Connecticut.
Yes. In fact, of the 5 million people who filled out a bracket on ESPN, only two got the Final Four correct. And of those two, I don't know if anyone had the I think one had the Butler-UConn final. And the reason it's so unusual is that even though we hear that there's great parity in college basketball, we don't actually process that fact. We kind of know it intellectually, but we usually pick brackets by our gut. And we just can't foresee that Butler will keep winning games. And even though UConn's this great and storied franchise, they were a number three seed. They were really terrible midway throughout the year. And they've had a great run. They won five games in 5 days in the Big East tournament. They've won every game, obviously, so far in the NCAA tournament. And somehow these two teams, an 8 seed and a 3 seed, are almost certainly going to provide us with great entertainment tonight.
And you'd, again, look at that. You mentioned UConn having some trouble halfway through the season. Butler did not even win its own conference this year.
Right. Well, Butler had to come back and win the conference tournament, but there was a meeting. I mean, imagine if you were a player on the University of Milwaukee, a team that no one had thought of except when you look at Butler's schedule and say, wow, they lost twice to Milwaukee. I didn't even know Milwaukee had a team, you might be saying. So, yeah, Butler was great last year. They lost their best player at the time, Gordon Hayward, to the NBA. And so this year, there was a lot of regrouping, and the players, as often happens, the players say, we have to take this on ourselves. And from right about February, they went on this torrential winning streak. They won their conference tournament. They've been winning every game in the NCAA tournament. And they're playing like a team, you know, they don't seem like a team where you say, wow, how do they get it done? They're just great at defense, and they win every close game. And except for one or two games, you know, all their games are close, and they couldn't be happier with that. Because not only are they experienced in terms of, hey, we've been here before, so let's chalk it up to our life experience. They think about what to do. They've strategized how to build on their experience, and they couldn't be smarter. They're really a fun team to watch and think about.
And before we get too many emails from Indianapolis, Butler did well. They were the co-champions of the regular season, I think, with two other teams had the same record. So they did go there. But I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the University of Connecticut. UConn, on the men's side, this was a team, as you suggested, that was not thought to be going anywhere this particular year, almost a rebuilding year for Jim Calhoun at Connecticut. Plus, he gets hit with some violations, some recruiting violations there at the end of the year, and he's going to be penalized next season. It's a little like you have, everybody's favorite David against a Goliath who, well, maybe not as Goliath as Duke or Kentucky, but nevertheless, a little bit tainted.
Yes, a little bit tainted. I would say that that is fair. Kentucky and UConn were playing in the other semifinals, and it was noted that it was definitely going to be a Cinderella versus a Goliath, because Kentucky, not only do they have the great and storied history, but their coach had also the taint of NCAA violations. Now, Jim Calhoun is a really interesting guy. He contains multitudes. His dad died at 15. He told his mom, I'm going to take care of you, said yesterday, but he didn't know what that meant. Worked in the shipyards, you know, melted down copper, took every blue-collar job, then a high school coach, then a small college coach, and then the coach of UConn. Everything that UConn is, if we think of UConn as a big, bad Goliath, it's all because of Jim Calhoun. And there were recruiting violations. Before the violations, he would kind of skirt along the line of legality and do things like hire the high school coach of players he wanted. It was legal then. It's not legal now. But Calhoun will serve 3 games next year for recruiting violations with a player named Nate Miles. It's some a slap on the wrist. To others, they characterize it as a blow to his legacy, because this is a man who cares so much about his legacy. But he's in the Hall of Fame and deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, and he's accomplished so much that that should be remembered as the violations. And the violations shouldn't be dismissed, but, you know, it's part of a mixed bag.
We're talking with NPR sports correspondent Mike Pesca, who's there in Houston for the final tonight on the men's side. We want to hear about the women's side, too. What have we learned this year in the NCAA basketball tournaments? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And JT, that's where I got the T from, is on the line from Columbus.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, about the David and Goliath, I was only speaking about the men's, really, but that I think the one and done has actually done a lot to equalize the basketball field, in that the Goliaths get to recruit the NBA talent, but they're gone after a year, so then the Davids have the time to build up a team without the talent, but maybe allows coaches like Butler's coach, whose mind escapes me right now, to build up a program that can compete. And I think we'll be seeing a lot more of the Final Fours with bigger seed numbers in the, ending up in them than we're used to.
So I think what JT's saying is like George Mason, when they had their great run a few years ago, and like Butler last year, and again Butler this year, you get teams that stick together for a few years, and they get cohesion. They learn how each other, all the players learn how each other plays, as opposed to a place like Kentucky or Duke or Connecticut, for that matter, where you get great stars, but they're one and done. They play 1 year, then they're off to the NBA.
Right. And Connecticut has never had a one and done player. Kemba Walker, their great, great player, who's as good a college player as you'll see and is going to be a fine NBA player. This is his junior year, and he might stay. He's, you know, kind of been intimating he might stay. Like, by the way, the Columbus guy, the Ohio State player, Jared Sullinger, has said he's going to stay. And people are very excited when a player who's, you know, possibly a lottery pick decides to play for another year. It's good for the college game. Could very often be good for that player, not in terms of remuneration, but in terms of developing the game. That's the number one point, the one-and-done players, and the fact that there are, you know, 25 players in the NBA who, you know, 20 years ago would be on college teams. I mean, Derrick Rose would be playing for Memphis, and Durant would still be playing in Texas, not, you know, be coming in second for the MVP awards. But the other thing that it does, it's not just age. You know, a guy like Shelvin Mack is very well may be taken in the NBA. He's Butler's point guard. But Shelvin Mack not only benefited from aging, he benefited from the great coaching of Brad Stevens. And so it's really worked out well for Shelvin Mack. It's worked out well for Butler. And I think that you might even start seeing more players saying, you know, 10 years down the road, I'm going to be such a better player if I get one more year in college. Very hard to turn down that NBA money. But maybe if there's an NBA lockout, it'll become a little easier to turn down the money.
JT, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Here's an email we have from Julia in Reno. What struck me most about this year is the fact that fans are watching men and women's teams with equal interest. Women's games are sometimes on later at night. Discrimination, she asks, but I'm amazed at the number of fans who are watching the two sets of games interchangeably. This is a huge change and a good one. Hopefully the sports announcers will quickly catch up. And, of course, she reminds me, we've not, Mike, talked about the women's finals as yet, where it turns out the formula is that the fourth time is the charm.
Yeah, the Notre Dame played Connecticut three times this year, and they lost all three, and then they won. And Notre Dame had like a 20-game losing streak against Tennessee, and then they won. So Notre Dame is doing pretty well by just getting a lot of experience losing, and this is the year they put it all together. Their opponent in the finals also pulled an upset, Texas A&M. And the way they did it, they came into their game against Stanford as the team who caused the most turnovers in the country. And Stanford was a team who almost never turned over the ball. And so you had to know that Stanford was going to turn the ball over more than they usually do. And the question is, would they remain composed? And they didn't really fall apart, but A&M just kept coming. And even though Texas A&M was down by 10 points with 6 minutes to go, they just kept coming, and Stanford couldn't hold it together enough. So the finalists this year, Texas A&M or Notre Dame, are not on anyone's – they weren't among the finalists that people expected to be there. Unlike the men's tournament, the number one seeds usually hold in the women's tournament. So I don't think that it's an example of parity. It's the other the other thing that happens when unexpected teams make it. It's legitimately great upsets, and that's a wonderful thing for women's basketball. I do have to say, in the interest of being accurate, even though the women's games are getting fine ratings on ESPN, they're not nearly as well watched as the men's games. And if you looked at the Conseco Fieldhouse in Indianapolis where they're holding their there were still empty seats, and the women just don't draw as much as the men. But I think it's really important to not contrast the two. I think comparing the two is fine, and to say that, like a lot of people have, the women's game is maybe 40 years behind the men's game in terms of, you know, 40 years ago UCLA had these great dynasties, and now UConn's having a great dynasty. And it's fine to compare the two, but to contrast them is unfair, and the women's games are popular, it's just not accurate to say they're nearly as popular as the men's game.
Mike Pesca with us from Houston. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go next to Pat. And Pat's with us on the line from South Bend, where we suspect she may be rooting for Notre Dame tomorrow night.
I am definitely rooting for Notre Dame, and I'm so proud of the girls. And I would like to appeal to the NCAA and the ESPN people to put the game on regular TV. It's only on cable, and I don't have cable.
Well, ESPN paid some degree of money for the rights to broadcast the women's games on ESPN. But that, Mike Pesca, you say the women's game is a little bit behind. Well, if that game, if the women's tournament were broadcast on as Pat put it, regular TV, they might get better ratings.
Well, I probably think the opposite would happen, that if you just talk about the broadcasters, very few would want to bid, especially on the first few rounds of the tournament, and then there wouldn't be excitement for the finals. I mean, ESPN could switch to ABC, which is, you know, their corporate partner. They own both, Disney owns both stations. But the point is they're getting good ratings on ESPN, and at this point, Pat notwithstanding, you know, the universe is that the vast majority of households do get cable. But I think the women's game absolutely is growing, and it's growing in a different way than the men's game. It's growing not so much as entertainment, but it's growing from a participatory standpoint. So I don't think that ESPN, if anything, to my mind, deserves kudos for how much attention they've given the women's game. It's not a charity. They're making money off the ratings. But they really don't turn their back on women's basketball. They give a lot of programming time to women's basketball. They're more a source of good than ill in this conversation.
And Pat, I don't want to give anything away about my proclivities, but as a Subway alum, go Irish.
Go Irish. Yeah, Muffy McGraw, if she was a male coach, it would be no thing that she would be on TV. I feel that there's a gender bias going on. None of the women's games were on TV. And I'm entertained, and I love the Irish boys and girls, and I love the NCAA.
Well, thanks very much for the call. Have a good time tonight. Tomorrow night.
Thank you, too.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we get this is David. David with us from Fayetteville.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Hey, I just wanted to congratulate you guys on some great sports coverage. It's not overdone, but it's essential, and it's really fun to listen to.
Well, thanks very much for that, David.
I'm a huge Kansas fan, so I've had a rough couple of years. But I wanted to talk about the explosion of number of teams in the tournament and the just way this gives the non-power conferences the chance to get into the games and to live their little dreams or their big dreams. And what you think about, you know, the expansion of the tournament to, you know, 96 or even 128 or whatever they've been talking about.
And Mike Pesca, let me ask you about that. The field did expand this year, but not as much as some people wanted and other people feared to 96.
Yes, it expanded to 68. And one of the teams who was among the expanded group, what used to be called or what would normally be called play-in games, was VCU. And they made it all the way to the Final Four. And let me just say about when David says a tough couple of years, he literally means a couple, since Kansas won the national championship in 2008. So hundreds of other schools are saying,
well, we have high expectations.
I think that economically, CBS, the broadcast partners, TNT and TBS, would like more teams because that means more games and they'd get better ratings. And the NCAA would make more money. But fans of the sport would say, you know, once you start letting every team in, you really devalue the importance of the tournament. So there's a little bit of a tension. Last year, there was a rumor floated before the tournament schedule was announced that they were going to expand to 98. Here they've only expanded to, 96. Here they have expanded to 68. Perhaps they'll expand to 72 next year. It should be noted there are 350 or so teams in Division One. So if you compare the percent of teams that make the postseason in NCAA basketball as opposed to the pro sports, even though it seems like 68 is a lot, it's a smaller percentage than in most sports. But I do agree that you don't want any school that happened to eke out a winning record to play in the postseason, because then it becomes a little less special.
David, thanks very much for the call. Mike Pesca, have a good time tonight at the men's final there in Houston. The women's final is tomorrow night in Indianapolis. Thanks always for your time. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.